What's up, everyone? Before we get to today's show, don't forget to hit the like, subscribe, share, download, listen, and whatever other button there is, and leave us a review wherever you do listen. This ensures that we can continue bringing you the great guests and amazing content like we have for you today. In just a few short years, this week's guest has gone from the next big thing to the top of the BJJ competition scene, most recently winning the IBJJF Heavyweight Grand Prix just this past week. Listen as Six Blades' Victor Hugo discusses how he got his jiu-jitsu start with his father and how BJJ has become a huge part of his family. He also shares his advice on the benefits of heavyweights training with lighter partners and vice versa, how when you trust in the process, everything becomes natural, and his transition from Brazil to the U.S. Here is the Roll Radio with the multi-time IBJJF Pans and world champion, Victor Hugo.
Welcome to Roll Radio.
And we are live.
Here we go.
Mr. Pond, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good today. I got the right amount of caffeine in me for today, so I think
you I'll be a little fall chipper.
I will not fall asleep. I never fall asleep. I get quiet, but I don't fall asleep. Before we get started, though, today, therollradio.com, if you haven't heard, we changed up the gi giveaway that we do with Fuji, and drop us a question at therollradio.com. If it gets on air, you go into a pool to win a free Fuji gi, which means, you know, we only do four or five of these at the most a month. That is a great percentage for you to win a gi. So go to therollradio.com, drop us a question. If it gets read on the air, you go into that pool. And then after we pick the winner at random, you have 72 hours to respond to an email from me, and the gi is on its way to you.
Yeah, easy way to get hooked up with the guys from Fuji, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff.
We had some successful gi giveaways.
We've had quite a few so far.
Yes. So let's take advantage of that. Matter of fact, speaking of giveaways, I want to spin this in a slightly different direction.
Oh yeah, so, what's this?
Yeah, you know, we made these cool T-shirts.
I don't know. Oh, look at that!
Right there, yeah. off the microphone. But anyway, if you want one of those, I want you to share the Instagram posts and tag us in it for this episode.
Okay.
Okay. I want you, if you do that, I'll pick one person and I'll ship you the T-shirt.
Nice.
Just simply share it. Make sure you tag Roll Radio in it, and then I'll contact you. We'll connect, and you'll get the free T-shirt.
How do I get one of those T-shirts?
You can't. You can't. You're not allowed to wear cool T-shirt, cool stuff. Period. Anyway, shall we get to our guest?
We should, absolutely.
All right, Victor, how are you? How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great. It's such an important week for me, but it feels good to be here talking to you guys. You know, it's always an extra motivation for me to get those interviews, because you actually get to stop and think and go way back to your beginning of their story. And it brings good memories, keep you more inspired. So I really like it. Thank you guys for inviting me.
I already know why this is important, but for those who don't know, tell us a little bit. Why is this such an important week for you?
Well, first of all, we were a month away from the World Championship, and also have a big test this weekend, the Grand Prix for IBJJF. They make this Grand Prix together with World's Master. So we'll be four guys bracket. And usually every year they always bring the big names in jiu-jitsu. So it feels really good for me, just to be there, such an important card, you know, and to win, it will be a big statement 1 month before the world. So it's a big test, and whatever happens there, for sure, we bring something extra to the world. You know, people already will see you there and so close to the worlds. And that's the main goal for, I believe, every athlete when rolls at black belt, you know, such a great accomplishment, a lifetime goal. So, yeah.
Do you feel pressure as all of this is approaching? I mean, you've been on the mat for a long time. This is not the first time you're competing, right? But is there a pressure still associated with stepping on the mat in this kind of prestige and facing some of these huge names? I mean, some of these guys have trained longer than you have, right?
Yes. People ask me that a lot. I think I'm really good at handling pressure, probably because Sean's me such put such good pressure on me during training. I'm under pressure during all my training, so I'm really good under pressure. I don't feel much pressure. I just feel like excitement to like be there, being part of the Grand Show, you know. Because if you look back, that's where you wanted to be like a long time ago. So I just like to look at that like that way, you know. Look at the that way. Like I believe like 6 years ago, I was home. I wasn't even a professional athlete yet. I was watching those guys like Bushisha and all the other guys doing this card. So it just feels good, man. Like it feels damn, it's my time. So I don't take much pressure. I feel like it fits me well. So I'm just happy to be there.
Speaking of Zanji, we had him on the show literally a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling us that you beat him up pretty well.
Nah, he's been humble. You know, like some days I'm lucky, but some other days, you know, the man, like, he's weird. He's like, I think he has 20 years. He's 20 years older than me, but still has the energy, you know. He has the energy. His jiu-jitsu always gets better. And the way we train, like, we don't train to win. Like, one or another, we really train, like, to beat the other one up. So I think it brings more, like, a deeper meaning to your jiu-jitsu. That's why I feel like we have a lot of these garage training sessions where the mats are really small, are not that big, so there's nowhere to run. You just got to handle the pressure, embrace it. So those are really fun.
I can only imagine you two in a very small space. Do you think that those training sessions are really, they've made you what you are, who you are today, meaning this grinding? I know he's very known for grinding, and so are you. I mean, you use your physical attributes to really to your advantage as the fights are unfolding. How has this shaped? How did you become what you are today?
Definitely, because I feel like the way that he does jiu-jitsu, his brother and like all like his students, eventually they really like to go for the pressure. They like to go for controlling positions. Pretty much they all want to go to mount and submit from mount. That's the main goal. So they just try to keep doing that over and over with me, you know. So that built me like some resistance, you know. As if I ever get mounted in competition, it's not gonna be the first mount I get mounted in my life. I've been there before, so I'll take that like as any other position. So I feel like it's very extreme, so it brings you to another level in jiu-jitsu. So it helps me a lot. It helped me a lot for sure. Like I remember my very first training session with him, Lovato. I got like demolished. It was bad. And I had just won my very first world championship as pro belt. I was feeling really good against black belts, but they just bring me to another level at Smash. So I feel like since then I have improved so much in other aspects of my jiu-jitsu, you know, and it does help. You know, sometimes you just get to his house and we hang out there like for 3 hours doing jiu-jitsu, discussing positions. That's another thing that I always like to bring is like questions, you know. I feel like if you have like the prestige, like if you're lucky enough to be close to your sensei, you should always be making questions, because I'm pretty sure the questions I have now, he probably had before, and he'll have the answer right away. So yeah, just try to be there and like enjoy that moment.
A moment ago, you said that you were a purple belt and you trained with Zanji and then Lovato. And they smashed you. I'm trying to visualize this, and it's hard to believe. For those who don't know, I mean, you're quite a statue. I mean, you are not a big small boy. Matter of fact, recently, just now, you know, we looked at your Instagram and we saw a picture with Zanji and Travis Stevens, and they both look much smaller than you. How is it possible that they were smashing you?
Yes. I actually built up a little bit too. I was way skinnier whenever we met. I probably gained like, I would say like 40 pounds since I moved to America. So that made a huge change too. But just the way that they do, you know, like if you see our team is full of big guys. Mm-hmm. So being big is not going to get you really far. You got to be big and have jiu-jitsu, you know. We have many big guys and not always the bigger ones winning. So it's really cool, you know. That's another thing that I think helped me a lot. Like, we have such a big team of big guys, like James Popolo, Rafael Lovato, Gustavo Diaz, Thiago Pereira, you have a lot of masters too. And I really felt like they always train like to get better. Of course, we have our time for competition training where we actually want to win the role and stuff. But most of the time, we're just like training with no time on and just like trying to get each other better, you know? So I feel like that helps me a lot for sure. And also all those guys that I'm talking about, they're all great minds on their own business. They all have business. They're all successful, like professors. So I feel like they always help me with something. You know, I'm the youngest of them, so I'm always trying to listen and like learn something from them.
You talk about asking questions, and even now you're talking about learning, and taking advantage of being surrounded by some of these big and successful men around mm-hmm. you. Many people are afraid to ask questions. Many students, forget about world champions, but talk about just average students. They are afraid to ask questions. They are afraid to be wrong. They are afraid to ask a right question or wrong question. They don't want to be embarrassed. They don't want to be spotted out. And you're talking about something completely opposite. You're talking about, I ask questions all the time. I surround myself by these guys. Why is that so important? Why do you think asking questions is so important? Why do you think people are afraid of it?
Well, I think it goes way back probably to childhood, you know, like maybe they'll be blamed for asking questions. But for me, my dad always told me, you know, like you should never feel bad for asking questions, you know. And he had like a friend that would be a good example for that. So I try, of course, I'm not that guy who's asking questions all the time, but I try to practice something. And if it doesn't work the way that I think it should work, I just try to make like a really like a real founded question, you know, like not like silly questions. And I feel like as that is fresh on my mind, it'll be the right time for me to ask this question, you know, because many times I have done a position wrong. I went back home and I was like, man, I need to ask something. I need to ask Shanji about that. And then the other day I forgot. So I just like to use the momentum, you know, like we just rolled, he did something, or probably I did something that didn't work. And I was like, Shanji, what do you think I should do here? And just like that, I also learned from them because many times I saw him asking like a purple belt, what's that bullet that he did? Can you do that again? So it's just a habit that it becomes like normal between us. So some other guy did something cool, I might ask him. And I have seen that many times. Like we have this new kid, Philippe. He's the youngest from our team now. He's a brown belt. Sometimes he does stuff and I saw like Rafael Lovato asking, how do you do that? And I just think it's cool. If you see a guy that like accomplished asking someone that would say like less accomplished than him, like questions, why wouldn't you not like make questions to him? Like, you know what I mean? So I just think it's a humbling experience to be around these guys, you know?
Yeah. But listen, a lot of people think that once you get your black belt, you know everything. A lot of people think that, you know, you've trained for 10 years or 8 years, whatever it is. You got your black belt. Now you're an instructor. You can teach classes and you know all the answers. You know everything. You can't be wrong.
Yeah. You automatically download everything to the belt.
That's it. It's a matrix, right? Just goes down, right?
Yeah, you take the pill.
Yeah. I feel like whenever you get your black belt, you kind of, you should have your learning pattern, right? Like your pattern, like, oh, how do I learn? Do I learn by drills? Do I learn by studying more? So it should be easier for you to learn faster, I feel like. But I know what you're saying, and I have been with black belts like that before. Like once they're black belts, they don't want to learn anything no more because they already have the game and stuff. But I don't think this mindset will take you very far as an athlete or as a teacher, because someday, let's say I'm a judo guy, I only do judo, and I'm a black belt in jiu-jitsu. I'll have some student that wants to play guard. So, am I going to be able to help him? You know? So I feel like my mindset should be complete and like be able to help you with whatever it is. You know?
That's good. Good stuff. I wanted to backtrack a little bit. When you started with Zanji, you were in Brazil and you got, if my memory serves correct, you got a scholarship to the University of Jiu-Jitsu, which I think a lot, I mean, that blows people's minds. I don't think they realize that that's a real thing, you know, hobbyists especially. And, you know, as a kid moving from Brazil to the U.S. for this, I mean, what was that like for you? What were you thinking? What were you going through? Was it a hard decision? Because you had just started college too, right?
Well, yes, it kind of was, but we kept it. It was kind of very natural, you know, because I wasn't like, oh, I'm going and then I stayed. I would go back and forth. So my family was getting used to it too. So, but at some point, like whenever I first got the invite, I had to take like big decisions, like, oh, I need to drop out of school and follow my dreams, which was being an athlete, you know? So yeah, it was kind of hard at the beginning for the family to take it because of course they want me to study, to have like a degree and stuff, but they saw it was a good opportunity, you know, because my country, like it doesn't have the best opportunities for athletes. And even if you go to college, it doesn't mean they're going to be successful, you know? So they saw that I was doing good and they supported me. They always supported me, but also as any other parent, they wanted me to get a career, you know? And it was something unique for me, you know? I always dreamed of that. I was like a blue belt and I saw those, because I've been winning titles, but I wasn't ever like, oh, this is the guy. This is the guy. Like, I didn't have big attention from the media, from the color, as a color belt. So I saw like those kids coming to the US and just training jiu-jitsu. And I was like, man, I wish one day I'll have the opportunity, you know? And whenever I blinked, I was here already, you know? I had no English, so I had to start with that, you know, learning English. And also, I was just a kid. I was 19 years old, but living with your parents, it's different than living with another man. So learn a lot. And I'm really grateful for my friends here who like took care of me, like had a lot of patience with me, you know? It's just hard, you know, like, because you live in your country, not you're not living like your parents' house, but you leave your country and other culture. So you start to learn another language, being a foreigner and all that. And sometimes the clock is ticking and you don't really realize that you're in another country. Sometimes I spend time with my Brazilian friends a lot, but whenever they're gone, I'm here in America by myself. So it was a big change, you know, it was hard. Sometimes you miss family, but once you look back and you look where you are now, you're like, man, this is what I wanted. So you just put your head on, like, go.
I want to dig deeper, a little bit deeper into this, because what you're talking about right now is one in a lifetime opportunity. I mean, there was only a handful of people who had opportunity like this. Even if you look scholarships in general, you know, to schools or wherever it might be, those are rare occasions. How did you find out about the scholarship? How did it go down? Who contacted you? How did that unfold?
Yeah. So if you see them, like, they don't have a big team. They always had one or two guys in the whole like divisions. So it would happen very naturally because they also didn't have the scholarship up to me. Like, I think I was one of the only guys to that they were ever took like to teach and stuff, because I won the world championship. But as I was coming to the world championship, I had a friend in the team. His name is Gustavo. He was a black belt already, and we had a friend in common. And my friend asked him, like, can you take care of him for the worlds? He's from another team. He's from Brazil, but he's really good. Can you take care of him, like, coaching, because he doesn't know no one in the U.S. So Gustavo took a good care of me, you know. And that day in the event, I met Sean and Saulo, you know. I just met them briefly. I wasn't fighting yet. I think my day was Thursday. I met them like Wednesday. So they met me and Gustavo told me, oh, this is a friend of my friend. He's from Brazil. He's competed this weekend. They didn't know me. I was like, oh, cool. And whenever the purple belt, they came in, I had like 9 fights. I think I submitted 7 and I won double gold. So I was like the highlight of the day. And they were there, they were watching. They were like, oh shit. The kid likes to fight. He has the fire. So right after my tournament, they come to me, they congratulate me, and they're like, man, you should come train with us 2 days, you know, in San Diego, since you're in the U.S. You know, you're a big guy. It would be nice to have you train with us for a couple of days. And I was like, damn, let's go. I feel like it would be a good opportunity, because my teacher in Brazil, he was a big fan of them too. So I was like, damn, that's a really good opportunity. So I went there to visit, and it was very natural. As I said, like, I trained. We had a really good time training, and I went back home, and then Gustavo texted me like a couple of weeks later. I was like, man, you should come to train with us for Nogi Worlds, you know, be part of the team. You're a big guy. We're big guys. And I think we can help you just as you can help us. And it was very natural. You know, I think they really liked my vibe. It was like a destiny. I should be there. And that's how it happened. Because as I said before, they are not known as a school who like keep drafting people. They usually take just one and they focus on that one. I think this time was me. And I think before it was Shonji, one time was Lovato, you know.
How did this conversation take place with your parents?
Yeah. I mean, it was actually easier, you know, because I had a lot of friends, like teammates back in my city, that they would go like do the same thing I did, but like in another state. Let's say they're from Austin, they're living in California because California had better jiu-jitsu or more competitions. So that would be very cool. But my dad, my parents never approved that because they're like, they're still here in the country. They're still like facing the same challenge, you know. It's not like it's going to be a big change. But for other people, it really helped them level up. So I just stay true to myself. Like, man, I kind of want to leave my city, but I don't because I really like the training here. And I'm going to the school, you know, I have my parents here, I have this sport. So it really got me like, because whenever I had my blue belt, I was like, should I go or should I stay? Because Cesar Costa was a big team, like back then, like it's still a big team, but they're like had big stars. Mm-hmm. And I kind of had a little invitation to go there, like a couple of invitations. I went there to train, cross train a little bit. And I didn't know what to do, you know, like, because I also knew that I couldn't stay in my city for longer. Like purple belt was like, the further I can go, I have the feeling. So it was very natural. I told them I want to go to the U.S. again. And of course, like the best side of it would be like a sponsorship. I was a sponsor to go. So they kind of took it easy, you know, but they were kind of like, are you going to keep going to this school or not? And I actually, I registered myself for one more year this school. And the other day I went there and canceled it. So that's how it happened.
What were you majoring in? Like if this didn't happen,
nutrition?
Nutrition.
Yeah, nutrition. I was going to the third period, but yeah, I registered, but the other day I was like, no, I can't. I can't lie to myself. I really want to go. It's time to take a break. I told them let's just take a break of a year and see how it goes. And boom, in the end of the year, I won another world championship Nogi. I was like, I can't miss the moment, you know. I need to dive on this. So that's how it happened, you know.
Well, that support from your parents, I think it's critical that, you know, that transition, the smooth transition between those two worlds. And, you know, you're talking about from a young man to an adult, and then obviously from a school to, you know, another education format. And then you're talking about between Brazil and then U.S. I mean, these are all very big changes happening all at the same time. And mm-hmm. you even mentioned that English was not even a factor at that point, right? You had to learn the language from the beginning, or did you have some English as all of this is unfolding?
No, I had to learn from the beginning. I knew very little.
Yeah.
Very little.
See, same thing for me.
Yeah.
I'm 400 too. Not for Brazil, but I'm 400 too.
Where is your country?
Poland. I'm from Poland. Yeah.
Poland.
Thomas is trying to get me to insult him, and I'm not taking the bait. I'm not going to fall for it this time.
But listen, let's get to your dad, to your father for a moment. I know he plays a significant role. Even Gary mentioned that a little bit earlier, in getting you into jiu-jitsu and then continuing with the jiu-jitsu. Talk about how important he was in the development of this profession, essentially, because right now this is your life, this is what you do.
Yeah, he helped me a lot, you know, like just not like a father, but actually a training partner, you know, because of course has the figure of the father who can like actually tell you like let's do this and do that, but he played a big figure of like a training partner. We'd like get ready together, we'd go train together, we'd roll together. Of course, he would be too strong for me sometimes. Like there was a point that he would be too much. And then we passed the lab, and then I was like growing too much. And then he got like older. So, but still we're in the same room. So the preparation would be the same. He would compete too. So we would compete the same competitions. So it was really good to me. Like it was really cool. And I think unique to have your father as actually a training partner. Of course, he has his other jobs, but he would be getting ready to the same tournaments as I was, you know, so that was really cool. He was always pushing me. My mom too, she was always pushing me. She was like, oh, you should be trained, should you stay home? So the family played a big role here. And it's so cool because I feel like now, always, but now too here in America, I see that happening a lot. Like I used to teach kids for a while and a lot of the parents, they start training after a couple of weeks, they see the kid training. Mm-hmm. And maybe a year later, you see both of them competing. So I feel like jiu-jitsu is one of the only sports where you can actually like do that. You know, like the whole family is competing, the whole family is training, the whole family like is this environment. And it is a healthy environment, you know, because everyone like is trying to get better at something. And as they're trying to get to that point, like better at jiu-jitsu, they're getting better in all the skills. I have seen kids that had problems talking, like they were not very social. And as soon as they started jiu-jitsu, that got really better. Like, it's crazy, you know? Okay. I feel like you can add up so much. And my family itself, I started training my dad. Then my cousin started. And then my other cousin started. And nowadays, I think we have like 10 people, my whole family training. My cousin's a European world champion. European champion, and he took second in the world. He's coming to compete again. It brings such a big impact to the family, you know.
So instead of everybody coming for dinner, they just come and you guys train.
Hit the mats.
yeah. That happened many times.
That's not going to happen in my family. I can tell you that after.
Gary, did you have a question? I saw you starting to say something.
No, I really wanted to key in on that father thing a little bit more.
Go ahead.
And what you just said about, you know, how you've seen it change kids too. Because I know that when you were younger, you quit. You played a lot of sports. And then at some point, you stopped everything. And then your father got you into jiu-jitsu. And I was just wondering how that transformation went. Because it seems like you were unsatisfied with a lot of different things. And then you found this along with your father. And it turned into what Thomas just said a minute ago. Now it's your profession.
Yes, I feel like out of the other sports, jiu-jitsu was the most welcoming one for many reasons. I think one of the reasons would be like, it doesn't matter if you're tall, if you're slow, if you're fast, you can do jiu-jitsu, you know? And I wasn't the fastest. I wasn't like the most athletic, but I still could do it, you know? I would still roll with other kids in my age and be able to give them a hard time. So that was really motivating. And the environment was a good environment too. It was challenging, you know. We would joke with each other, we'd go hang out. So I feel like the other sports that I practice, they would be like very related to the school. So sometimes if you're not in the circle, you wouldn't be part of the sport, you know. Or if you're not as talented, you probably wouldn't be part of it. So, and also it was kind of far from my house. So I was lucky enough to have this cool, like, walking distance from my house. So that's where I hang out most of the time. Once I started, I got, like, you know, the excitement. And I would go there, like, 3 times a day. During, like, summer break, I would go there, like, 4 times a day. And it's just, like, it's simple, you know. As more you train, better you get, you know. So I think that the very first, like, 2 years, I had a really, like, good – I developed good. So – as I started developing, competing, I started to love it way more. And my parents got involved, and that's how it went, you know, that's how it went down. Because I actually never got to compete in other sports. So I think that was one thing too. Something always went wrong, and I couldn't, like, go for a competition. So it felt good, you know, like the competing vibe, you know, trying to get better. Yeah.
Cool. Nice.
What's harder for you, watching your dad compete or you competing yourself?
I think watching my dad compete, watching my cousin compete.
Why?
You know, I don't know. You just feel like they're fragile, something like that. I feel like they feel the same way to me. Like you only think the worst can happen. You know, it's crazy. And I feel like my cousin, like my dad, not as much now because he's so strong. He's stronger than he thinks. He's very scary, but he thinks he's not scary. So I just feel like whenever he goes to the guy on his division, I'm like, oh, he'll be fine. You know, like this guy is not going to smash him because he's really strong. Well, but my cousin now, like I start to get a little like more tense because he's like one of the big name of his division. So they start to have those matches that are like the big star of the division against him and like start to get more like challenges. So I feel like with him is the one that I get more nervous.
Do you still train with your dad? What was the last time when you trained with your dad?
We rolled last year, yeah. I tied his belt, his black belt last year. My very first teacher, he let me do that. So he was from Motor Black Belt and I was able to tie it. And we rolled the other day, we rolled like for 10 minutes. He trains every day, man. I'm like at some point, like on my off season, I'm pretty sure he trains more than me. if it was for him, he trains twice a day, you know?
So last time you rolled with him, who won?
I think it was me, but he still gives me a hard time, you know? He still gives me a hard time.
I did not know that you had the privilege of rewarding your dad with a black belt or being part of that ceremony. Talk about that a little bit, because that is, first of all, achieving a black belt is huge. I mean, that's a huge milestone for anybody who trains jiu-jitsu. And I hope more people have that privilege, but it takes a lot of sacrifice, a lot of time and effort to get there. What did it feel like when that moment came for your dad? Did you, well, first of all, you did know, I assume you knew that that was coming. Did you?
I did.
Did he know?
He was expecting, but he knew, he got the news like probably a month before or so. And everything worked out so good because I went to Brazil and then we ended up doing it while I was there. So it was perfect, you know? And I was so happy to do it, man. Like, I feel like we put so much work through it. It was like 10 years of training. And I mean, we put so much work and it's almost like you're working with your eyes closed. And you open your there, you know, like you look back, it was like, dang, like 10 years ago, we just started here, Dad, and now you're getting your black belt. It's crazy. And he put so much effort to it, you know, I know how much effort he put it, you know, like training, competing, and he pushed himself. He really wants to win. And seeing the struggle, you know, like from working and all that, it was amazing, you know, it was unique. I feel like I have a lot of stuff that, like, I'm grateful for. This is one of the things, you know. And all the thing is be able to train with him, you know, like you train with your own dad, like mess with him, trash talk.
I can imagine you two training. the amount of trash talk that takes place.
Whoever loses the role is gonna wash the dishes and all that.
is that what it is?
Oh yeah.
If you don't mind me asking, how old is your dad?
He's 48.
48.
Getting up there.
See, there you go. Gary, there's hope for you.
I know.
There's hope for you. A small hope, but
48 was a long time ago.
He's crazy.
I'm not crazy.
On getting people to train, you know, like he has his mama train, my grandmother, she trained like 3 times.
What?
He had my mother training. Yeah, he pushes you. He was like, mama, you should train jiu-jitsu. It's going to be the best thing for you.
That's great.
She trained for a couple of times.
Of course,
she didn't feel like doing it, but she loves it. She understands the competition, all that. It was funny. He puts the gi on her, you know. It's like some people, they have that bug and they want to like show, like the way that they like feel grateful they are is like by wanting to people like to try it to feel like it's gonna like help them as much as help them, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's wonderful. I love that.
It's one of those things that you really want to share. Like, I know people that play hockey, right? And they, or people that, you know, play flag football now. And they don't, it's their time alone in a way, and they don't want to share it with people. But I think jiu-jitsu, it's like, no, come on, you got to check this out. You know, everybody, I mean, you know, that's how Thomas got into it. A friend of his just kept pushing and pushing. You got to try it. And I don't think it's like that with a lot of other sports.
Why do you have friends who play football, not train jiu-jitsu?
That's just the way it is.
You need to talk to his dad. You need to talk to Victor's dad to learn how he gets people into jiu-jitsu.
All right. Give me his number. We'll figure it out. I'll get some people in here.
I love that story. I love this story with your family and your grandma training jiu-jitsu. I mean, that's ridiculous, but I love it. Listen, I want to pivot this conversation slightly in a different direction. Jiu-jitsu often is being viewed as the smaller guy protecting themselves from the larger guy. What can the smaller person do to, you know, manipulate the situation, protect themselves, escape from somebody who is stronger, faster, bigger, heavier, whatever the case is, right? You don't have these experiences. You are on the other side. Right, but I have
a little bit. I have four guys like that know my size, but still, I have been a smaller man a couple of times. But I do understand what you're saying.
Well, but I want to ask you in the other direction. What does the bigger and stronger guy? What does he have to worry about when they go with the smaller people? Is it easy for you to go with a smaller person, or do they introduce different challenges?
Well, it depends on how skilled they are. Like, I have had a hard time with smaller person. Of course, there is like a standard, you know, like till lightweight. I think compared to my size and skills, I feel like I can get a hard time. But below that, it would be kind of harder because of my skills and their skills. Like, I think the athleticism, like strength, can play a role. But I have lost like lightweights before, you know, like, and I feel like it's also like how much they're training a bigger person. If you're a small person and you should train a bigger guys, you're not going to have a hard time like ever like facing them, you know, like, cause you're already used to it. But if you're a smaller person and you never take the challenge to train the bigger people, they might be a little more challenging, you know. I'm not saying you're not going to be able to like beat them, but of course you will, depending on the skill level, but you feel kind of different, you know? And that's why I like to train small guys too. I love to train small guys. My friends here, they're like lightweights, middleweights. And even in Malfacini, I got to roll with him at his school back in, I think, 3 months ago. And it was an amazing roll because I feel like as big as I am, when I train somebody smaller, I'm really training my timing, you know? If I'm able to follow you, like follow like the transitions at the same speed as someone smaller than me, I'm gaining a really good training there, because if I can move at that speed against a big guy like me, it's going to be like crazy, you know, that's going to be hard to stop. So I feel that's one of the points that helps me, like being a big guy and being a smaller person. I think jiu-jitsu does play a big role, like being a smaller person rolling someone big. For self-defense, I think it would be the best thing, because a smaller person taking a punch for a bigger person, it would be like a tragedy. But whenever you're small and have this skill, you're more skilled to the big person. I think you can take them out, you know, definitely, you know. But still, I'm big and I have had times with small guys before. You know, Jonathan Gracie, Cobrinha son, we had a couple wars and they're always smaller than me.
What are the biggest challenges for you when you train with a smaller person and they are skilled, they are top level guys? What is the most challenging thing for you?
I feel like anything I do wrong, they'll be my back. I have this feeling. I have the feeling that I'm fighting like against a very skilled backpack. You blink, the backpack will be here. That's one of the things that I feel, you know, like it's hard to find the angles, I feel like, because they're so short. So I'm so long, it kind of feels awful a little bit, you know. I feel like my back, it would be the main thing that's exposing, like, you know. And that's why I tell like my smaller friends whenever they like to fight absolutes or everything or anything like that, I was like, man, if you fight a big guy, you gotta look for his back. I think back control would be the thing, because even if your side control you have a good pressure, depending on how big the guy is, he'll be able to like bunch press you off it and create a scramble that you don't want to be on it. As long as you're on the back, it's hard, you know, like to be aware. The only thing you can do like is a explosion rotation to face them from close guard, and if you stay aware of that, I think you can take him out. So I'm very aware of like smaller, and also another thing is like standing. Depending on how the wrestling is, like I'm so long, it's like easier for them to shoot a single leg or something like that because I'm so long, you know. So those are the things that I'm always like aware of someone smaller.
Yeah, I'm saving that for Sunday. I'm going to tuck that away for open mat on Sunday and work on that stuff.
A lot of students who are or students to be, people who want to start jiu-jitsu, they often are concerned about training with somebody who's much larger than them, and you know, they're afraid of getting hurt, right?
Yeah.
And this is where being good training partner comes in really
yes.
Important, right? What would be your advice? As the stronger and larger guys, often you are on the heavier side as far as the opponents are concerned. What would be your advice for the little guys, as far as not being too concerned about getting hurt or getting smashed, or you know, how should they approach this? I mean, obviously, I don't know. Should everybody try jiu-jitsu? I mean, I guess that's a first question.
Yeah, it's challenging, you know. Like everybody should try, but it's not for everybody, you know. Like, I think as a smaller person, and if you're ever facing someone bigger, like at the beginning of your journey, it would be a good thing for you to have a solid survivor position, you know, like know what to do, like whenever it's on top of you, like someone's on top of you, like side control mount or something like that, have solid like survival positions. I'm not even talking about escapes. Escapes, it's after that. Survival is like being in positions like someone's pinning you and don't expose yourself where it can like get submitted or hurt. Like have all your elbows in, look for angles, you know, like then you can talk about escapes after. But survival is just like get your position, get somewhere within a bad position. You're not going to tap like from pressure. You're not going to tap because you expose your arm too much. So just get really solid on these survival positions, you know, and from there you go, you know, like. You have to think too that that will be just one step. You won't be facing big guys every day. There are always going to be someone smaller than you too, or someone your size. So that big guy over there, he's just one more step in your journey, you know? Like, and as a big guy too, I always tell like my friends, big guys, there's no reason for you to be rough with someone smaller, you know? Because that's not going to take you anywhere. It's not going to bring you any extra skill, extra something, you know? You should always, like, if someone is smaller, you should be playing guard. That's why I tell my big guys, man, play guard is someone small. If you're able to play guard to them, you're going to be you're easily going to play guard for someone bigger because you're going to be able to follow them way easier and you're going to have, like, more speed. Your hip's going to be looser. That's what I encourage you to do, you know?
Do you think that guys your size can learn something from a smaller individuals?
Oh, yes, I think I do. Yeah. Even pressure. I was training with one of our black belts. His name is Rodrigo Pagani. I'm pretty sure he's a light featherweight. He's a black belt. Like, he's been a black belt for a long time. And we were training at his house in Brazil. He was showing me some of these, like, positions from side smash. And, man, he felt so heavy. And he's, like, 100. I would say he's, like, 160 pounds. I was like, dang, I don't feel that heavy. How come you feel that heavy? There's some magic in there.
Big breakfast.
And yeah, there's some magic in there. I need to learn that. So for sure, I think like someone smaller, because I feel like you being smaller, like pressure positions, you have to be way more precise because you don't have your size. So you have to be more precise with your angles, your positions and all that. So it is amazing, you know?
And that's the beautiful part of jiu-jitsu is that power, let's not fool each other, like power and weight has a lot to do, and strength has a lot to do with fighting, but there is a component of angles and taking leverage away from your partner, which really can take advantage of it if used correctly, if knowing how to maneuver through these positions, right?
Mm-hmm. 100%, because as you said, power and strength, it is a thing, but I think Saul used to say that they're not going to be for that forever. At some point in the match, or like training or like fighting, you run out of that, you know? I was actually laughing at some movies, those action movies. They have those like guys fighting for so long and they're not even sweating. I'm like, dang. What's your conditioning training?
That's the secrets of martial arts. Uh-huh. They never get tired.
Like, if you stop to think, they fight to death and they're even like, catch a breath. They're like, keep the same pace. And that's not how it happens in competition, actually rolling, you know? That's why it's good for you to have like a really crafted technique because that will save you whenever you're really tired. And that's how that's one of my main things, you know, like I like to train a lot, like and focus a lot on my technique, but lately also I've been focusing a lot on my power and my strength. Cause I think like, if I can align that with my size, it'll be like really dangerous, you know?
You're talking about power, strength and sustaining. Some
yeah. Both.
Yeah. Do you ever feel that you out of gas tank, that you completely depleted, that you don't have power when you train, when you roll, when you compete?
Yeah, I mean, like no, always, because I feel like we're technical, so a lot of the stuff that I do for me feels natural, so it doesn't feel like I'm using a lot of energy, you know. But that it is a thing. One thing that I feel like is like that I haven't had my 100% strength yet, you know, like that main strength. I still feel like my strength is still developing. So I'm always looking for get better at that, you know, like cause that aligned with the pressure, I think would be like something really good. Cause I train in masters, you know, they all have the old man strength and sometimes I just feel they're always stronger than I am. So I was like, I need that.
Please, Victor, forgive me. I've seen matches with you. Okay. if you are not strong right now, I don't know what strong is. Okay, like I don't want to roll with you when you are actually strong. I don't want to roll with you now, let alone when you actually get strong. Lord, help us all. You talk about being natural and things coming natural to you. You've mentioned this several times through this entire conversation. What does that mean? What does that mean to you? What does it mean to for you or natural or things come natural to you?
Well, I think it's more, it has to do like whenever you have a plant, you know, I read the other day, you put water in it and you kind of forget about it a little bit. You don't let it grow. And then like you plant the seeds, you let it grow and then the fruits come. I'm not really focusing on look at the plant at the, all the time and overthink about the plant. Oh, is the plant going to grow? Is there going to be fruits? I really like to focus on the process, you know, focus on the moment, like focus on today. And then a month from now, there'll be rolls. Am I going to be ready? Yes. Why? Because I focus on it day by day. I focus on my thing daily. I'm not focused on like, oh, am I going to be 100% ready for rolls in a month? Is my cardio going to be like perfect? Is my strength going to be perfect? I don't know. What I can control is what I'm doing now. So that's how I like to take the challenge. That's why I feel like I say that a lot. It becomes very natural because I wasn't even paying attention, like overthinking about what's happening. I was just focused on the moment. And then once that passes, I'm like, oh, it happened. You know, I feel like things happen for me like that. Like that's how I take challenges. And also that's how I take a lot of losses too. Like whenever I lost a match, it's not the end of the world for me. It's just part of the process. I'm always thinking on the next match and what I did wrong with this world. I already tried to bring better in the next match, you know?
But share some wisdom here, because a lot of students, and like my own students and students around the world, they often hyper-focus on things that go wrong, right? You mentioned losses. I lost this match. I got my guard passed, or I got submitted, whatever the case is. And they're really trying to solve that problem. They're trying to fix it. Versus what you're saying is, this is a part of a journey. This is a natural progression. Without that, mm-hmm. I cannot get better. You know, I'm accepting what's happening right now, but I'm not hyper focusing on this. Where does mm-hmm. this mental state come from? Like, why are you so focused on the process versus on some of these results, and especially the negative ones?
I think the main thing is like since my starting of like in sports and everything. Nobody ever expected big things from me because I was never the most talented. I was never like the most bright. So I was like, there's not much expectations coming out of my short terms when it comes to me. So I just feel like a little bit of the mentality stayed on me, you know, like there's no big expectations. Like that's how I was when I started. And it kind of is part of my, like, it's part of myself. You know, I feel like that's how it plays a big part. Whenever you have so much attention since the beginning, probably it plays out different. You push, like you have a lot of pressure in yourself. You're like, oh, I need to do this. I need to do that. Of course, I have a little bit of that. I push myself and all that, but I'm not freaking out about it. You know, I feel like I believe on the way I do things and like seems to be working real well, you know, and I trust a lot on the ones that are surrounding me and all that. I think. If you guys understood.
I think so. But I want to know, is there anything that wasn't natural, that hasn't been natural, that you had to really maybe hyper-focus on a little bit to make it part of your game or what you do?
I mean, the whole thing hasn't been like very natural. It was a lot of work on it. But sometimes I put the work in. I have this thing on me. I put the work in and I'm not even thinking about the work I already put in. I was like, damn, I need to do more. Did I do that? Did I do enough? So I'm not, it's all, it becomes natural. The process becomes natural, you know, because I was never really talented, you know, but as I said, I would go there 4 times a day in the beginning. I spent like 2 years training 3 times a day. And for me, that was natural. Why? Because the environment was good. You know, like the training was good. There was a lot of laughing and I felt good doing it. So I just embraced it, you know? And since the beginning, I always felt good on comfortable positions. And that's one of the things that helps me, like, probably handle pressure well, because there's been a lot of pressure put on me already. So That's one part of it, if it makes sense.
I got to ask you. So you competed at the highest level. You fought one of the best, the biggest, the strongest, the most skilled people out there right now. You talk about four-man tournament that's coming up right around the corner. You don't feel any pressure whatsoever?
I mean, there's a little bit, but no, not really. Like, for me, it's just like a big moment of, let's say, like, not like a party, but it feels like we're all gathering to go to battle. So it's just like very, like, it's hard to express the feeling, you know? Of course, there's the bright part, you know, I'm happy and all that, but also I have a lot of rage because there was a lot of suffering during the training camp. So it's just a mix of feelings, you know? But I don't think pressure will, like, bring a lot of stuff on me, because I feel like whenever there's pressure, people tend to get tight. Mm-hmm. You know, pressure brings you tight and it's not going to let you, like, flow and all that. So my main thing is flow. That's how my brand's called, Big Man Flow. So if there's, like, pressure in yourself, you're not going to flow as good. So I feel like the hardest thing is the process, and that I love it. You know, like, I'm there every day training with my partners, being smashing like the best in the world. And when it comes to the competition, of course, there's a little bit of pressure, but there's a lot of pleasure too, you know, like, for being there, for being star of the day, being part of such a big card, you know. That's what I like to tell, like, people, you know, like, there's two or more ways to think about something, you know. I just like to think in the brightest way, you know.
I mean, that's a beautiful way of thinking. Well, let me ask you this. So you said that, you know, if the losses come along and they do happen to all of us, you know, if things don't go according to plan, you don't put a lot of emphasis on those. It's part of the process. Yeah. Are victories part of your process as well, or do you celebrate those?
Of course, some I do celebrate, but for me, it's always about the next victory, you know, like, because whenever you have a lot of victories, it takes a little bit for it to get you comfortable. So if you're focusing on getting more victories, you don't get too comfortable. And I feel like greatness and being comfortable are not very, like, friends. So there is always going to be a little push. And being surrounded by the guys that I am surrounded with, it always an extra push, because they have so much victories and they're still competing. If you see all the guys that I am, they're still looking for the victory. They're still looking, like, for improvements. They could very well be, like, retired, have their own school, not being out there competing, but all of them, they're still pushing themselves. They still, like, want to compete. They're still, like, trying to beat the shit out of me. And, you know, it's inspiring.
Well, and that's why I asked you the question, because, you know, the camp you train with, I mean, that's top of the leagues. I mean, it's Shanji on its own. I mean, like, first of all, phenomenal jiu-jitsu practitioner. Mm-hmm. His brain works in the ways that not many out there do, right? How do you find yourself? How do you feel being surrounded by all these great minds? I mean, Lovato, Sanjay. I mean, the list just keeps going, right? And you are so successful already, but you are on the very beginning of your journey, and they are well deep into that journey with a very heavy success from a business and competition perspective. What's your feeling being surrounded by these amazing minds?
Well, first of all, I would say safe, because you know they're with you because they love you.
Wait a minute. You feel safe with all these monsters?
Safe, man. How am I going to be safe? I walk to the room, nobody wants to mess with me. So I feel safe to be myself too, you know? Do the jiu-jitsu the way I like, and feel safe to fail, you know? Maybe I'll fail, but I know they'll be there for me regardless, you know? And just like I'm going to be there for them. So it's just, it is good to have that, be safe with your training partners, because they're more than that. They're like brothers to me. And, you know, I'm safe to be myself. And, you know, yeah, just like crazy, because if anything goes wrong, I can ask them, what happened? What's your vision on that? And for sure, they have a word of wisdom for me. So, you know, it is something like that.
Speaking of words of wisdom, a lot of people, especially now after pandemic, you know, people trying to get into jiu-jitsu, trying to try jiu-jitsu for very first time. Many don't even know what jiu-jitsu is. What would be the one word of wisdom, one sentence of wisdom that you would pass on for someone who wants to start and perhaps is looking up to you, you know, as a successful practitioner, a successful competitor?
I would say take the challenge. It would be very worth it. It changed my life and it might change yours. That would be it. And more than that, I would say at the beginning, there's no reason for you to like go crazy, like volume. It's about consistency, you know, like maybe you can only go 2 days a week, but if you can go 2 days a week for, I don't know, 3 years, you see a lot of improvement. Unless like some people do sometimes, they start and they really like it. They want to go five times a week, but you see them fading away after 2 months. They get hurt. They get like, they want like they want the progress to be short in a short
sprint.
Time.
Yep.
And that doesn't happen in jiu-jitsu. That'll be hard, you know. Of course you see some improvement, but you suffer a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot of sometimes the suffering fades away the benefits, you know. And yeah. I feel like if you take it with time, because jiu-jitsu, I feel like there's a lot of understanding too. Like as I said before, each people has their own learning pattern, you know. And as more as you train, more you show up, you're going to have, depending on the facility, you're going to have different teachers. You're going to have different training partners. And you learn more like, oh, do I learn more my drilling? Is my bottom better than my top game? You know, like all that. You kind of start to like discover more about yourself.
I love it. That's, you know? the fact that you mentioned everybody has a different learning patterns. It is so true. Yeah. And often
for myself. Like sometimes teachers showing a position, I'm pretty sure I don't have ADHD, but I lost myself in the position. And whenever we're drilling, I'm like, dang, I can't remember the whole thing. And I look at the side, there's a blue belt doing thing perfectly. And then I can look at him and I do what he's doing. And now as I put the repetition, I get it, you know, like, and other persons, they're better learning by listening. So, you know, like, keep going. Sorry, I cut you.
No, you're fine.
That's what we want to hear.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
For sure.
All the secrets, man. All the secrets to steal from you. Listen, we've been at this for almost an hour now. Before we wrap this up, we do something at the end of each episode. We have five questions for you. We didn't tell you about this. A little secret. Gary's going to ask you five questions. Some of them are funny. Some of them are less funny. But see, the first thing that comes to your mind. Let's see where this goes. And Gary, you ready?
Yeah, and we have a listener question as well. So if you are listening, maybe it's yours. You'll get to hear it. But the first one, as always, you know, after all your previous athletics and stopping that for a little bit as a kid, what was it like the first time you stepped on the jiu-jitsu mat? What were you feeling?
Do you remember the very first day?
Not the very first day, but there is one day that was very, still very remarkable for me. I think it was probably the first week still. I started to feel very comfortable in the environment, like with the gi on. I felt like I did it there already. And I catch myself walking no flip-flops off the mat, on and off the mat.
Uh-huh.
And then my teacher called me out, "Hey, kiddo, you got to use your flip-flops. Who do you think you are?" That was very remarkable.
Small lessons, right? Uh-huh. Small lessons.
We yeah, teach that lesson here a lot.
Can't get you comfortable, you know?
Oh,
like, oh,
no.
I got this.
Nice.
No.
Number two is from the listener, and it's from Pete. We know Pete. Pete's a great guy. How long did it take before it all started making sense for you?
Oh.
I think, like, to my first competition, things made sense a little bit, you know? Like, I had my sequences. I had a really good sequence that I still use to this day, like flower sweep from close guard and then triangle from close guard. I really felt comfortable with it. So I feel like 10 months for me, I had a good combination that would work with people in my lab. I don't know how long it's going to take to you, but for me, it took 10 months. It actually took 10 months for me to actually go to my first competition. So 10 months with a lot of work, and I had a little position that was comfortable. My close guard, my floor sweep, my triangle. So that all made sense for me already. I knew that if I had the kill in a close guard, I would be able to floor sweep him or the triangle. And I had the confidence on me.
Would you agree that confidence level or these, you know, all comes together, more effort we put into it, is meaning from a training perspective. For somebody who's training twice a day, is this going to be the same as somebody who's training twice a week? Or is it going to be different?
Yeah. I think it's going to be different, you know, but I feel like there's so much to it, because if you train twice a day, that doesn't like assure you that you're going to beat up who's training twice a week. Mm-hmm. Because who trains twice a week could be a wrestler back in the school, or could be like a very talented like guy. So I feel like it's more, it has way more to do like with mentality too, you know. It's just crazy to think, you know, like, so I would say maybe the twice a day has more chances, but I don't know. Is it gonna get frustrated easier than the guy who trains twice a week if he takes a beat because he trains twice a day and then he's gonna stop? Mm-hmm.
And then also is the effort that goes into this, right? I mean, somebody could come to the academy twice a day and they could BS it, hang out, you know, all the stories and everything, blah blah blah. Yeah. And then somebody comes in for hour and a half twice a week and they really work hard. The results are gonna be very different, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was gonna agree. Touching on this, Stan, before we get to the next official question, but would you recommend like people finding a sequence for them, a beginner, like, you know, this sweep for to sure. that position to you know, sure. this submission?
For sure. I often get messages about it by big guys. Mostly they message me like, oh, I'm like 6'7", 270. I just started. There's something you can help me with. Like there's something I should work on at the beginning. I was like, you could probably just train your close guard from the beginning. Just feel safe in someone's when you have someone like someone in your close guard, and from there you start to figure out things more, you know. And I'm not saying for you to strict train there, but they'll keep you safe whenever you're rolling someone in your level. You have a little bit more of leverage probably because your legs are so long, and you feel like easier for you to do a flower sweep or a triangle than it would be for someone like with shorter legs. So I feel that a sequence is important, you know, because it's the beginning of the plan that you start to have for jiu-jitsu, you know. I feel like this played a big part on me. Like I started playing close guard as a white belt, and now I still playing close guard as a black belt, so it's part of myself, you know.
Great advice. Have you ever wanted to quit?
Not really, you know, like stop and quit, no, because I feel like jiu-jitsu gave me so much hope that without it I don't think there'll be actually something else that will fulfill me as much as jiu-jitsu does. You know, like, I don't see it. Having all the careers, yes. Like, combined with jiu-jitsu, yes. Like, not only being an athlete, being a professional, being a teacher, having my own clothing line as I have. So just being like an entrepreneur, yes. But I never see myself, even if I'm not working with jiu-jitsu anymore, not doing jiu-jitsu. I think like jiu-jitsu is part of my life from now and ever, you know? Now and ever, forever. Forever.
Good for
beautiful.
You.
Beautiful.
Good for
you. Describe your feelings when you received your black belt.
Did you cry?
As I like to say, fulfilling my destiny. I didn't cry, but I almost did. But it was just crazy, you know, because it was a big year. You know, I don't know if you guys are aware of this story, but behind that, but I had a 1 year as brown belt where I took a couple losses. I still won the world championship, and I made a deal with my sensei that I would stay one more year because I wanted to try to do the double gold Grand Slam, you know? And a lot of people think like, he stayed 2 years brown belt, that's probably sandbagging. Of course it's not, because as brown belt, there's only one thing that you can go after brown belt. Black belt, you know, and being a good brown belt is not going to assure anything for you as a black belt. We have seen many brown belts that get promoted to black belt, and you don't see them as much anymore. So I just wanted to take that challenge to be the best brown belt ever to do it, because I feel like that would be very helpful for me, and you'd bring my confidence to other level. And the whole road as a brown belt for one more year, it would be challenging. You know why? Because if I wanted to be double gold at Europeans, Brazilian Nationals, Pans, and Worlds, I would be facing the best guys in different countries, and that could things still could go the other way. You know, there's no such a thing like, oh, I'm going to win for sure. Because you win your division, good. You rest, and there's still absolute. There's still like 20 people for you to go through the whole bracket. So I had a lot of wars. Like Europeans, I remember I was losing by 2 points. And then I took the guy down in the last 2 minutes and took his back. That was my first absolute gold of the year. I was like, that was hard. Now we have Brazilian nationals. No, now I have Pan Ams. Pan Ams, it was kind of good. That was one of my best tournaments. I had a lot of submissions and all that. Then came Brazilian nationals. I was a little injured already from the trips and like training hard. Brazilian nationals, I remember I won my division. It was a really good division. But the finals of the absolute, I was really exhausted because of the trip and like the Brazil so hot, you know. And I remember the finals, I was losing to the last minute. And I put the guy on a triangle at that now. It was like crazy. And then we have Worlds now. It doesn't get any easier. Next step is always harder. Mm-hmm. So Worlds was pretty crazy too. I had a war with Jonathan Gracie on the quarterfinals. He picked me up and dumped me on my head. And I was able to come back from that. And it was just crazy. No, and I feel like my black belt was part of this whole process that took like more, not only the year, but more than that. But the year was very like part of me. So it was a really good feeling and exciting me too. You know, like once you get your black belt, you're like, wow, now I'm going to get to fight the big stars. You know,
do you think
I didn't cry, but I got really close to it.
Yeah. It's an emotional moment for all of us who have achieved that point. Mm-hmm. And
It is.
I hope many, many after us will achieve that point as well. Do you think the black belt is the beginning or the end?
For me, it was the beginning. I feel like if you think it's the end, you're not thinking right. For sure, the beginning.
Yeah,
there's so much more to learn, you know?
Yeah, we ask that question often, and it doesn't matter if the person's a high-level competitor or if they just, you know, have thoughts of opening their own academy, but they always think it's just the beginning. And it's two different paths. They're going to go on this teaching path. So they need to learn more. They need to keep growing, right? So they can share and hand it down. And you're going to do the same thing, but you also have that competition aspect, like you just said, where now I'm going to go against the biggest names in the world, the toughest guys in the world. So you've still got so much more room to grow.
Yeah, not so much. Yeah. If you don't like to teach, at least be a good example during class, you know, like be a good student, you know, that's a big part of it too, you know, be an example, because the white belts are always looking up to black belts and mm-hmm. all upper belts. That's what I like to tell my classes. So be a good student. It does play a big part, you know.
That's great.
In your journey.
I love
that's
it.
That's awesome.
Last all question. Right,
the last question, that black belt that you have, do you wash your belt?
Sometimes, once a month.
Once a month.
when it gets mixed up with the again, I forget, so I wash.
Oh, accidental washing.
Yeah, accidental washing. That's what happens.
All right.
Victor, what a phenomenal conversation we've had. We really do appreciate all the thoughts, all the wisdom that you have shared, especially particularly the personal side of your journey that many might not know about, all the struggles you have gone through in your life, and congratulations on all your success up to this point.
Thank you.
We'll be definitely watching you as you continue growing and continue exploring that jiu-jitsu journey. Where can people find you? You talk about people reaching out to you, you know, you answering questions. What's the easiest way to get a hold of you, just in case anybody has some thoughts or follow-up questions after this conversation?
Yes, I think you guys can hit me on the Instagram, you know, Instagram. Instagram competitions, if you ever see me, you can come by. I'm really easy going. For sure, we can talk. And if you guys are looking for improving your jiu-jitsu, make sure you can check my instructionals out. I really teach everything I do. You know, I didn't hide anything. I just did what people asked me, because as brown belt, I play a lot of 50-50, but people saw that I wasn't actually like looking for stalling anyone. I came with good transitions and like sweeps. So everything's there. My upside down guard game is out there. You know, like I just brought to people what people actually like to see from me. They were like, oh, you're so big and you play like this inverted guard and all that. I'm like, yeah. And I decided to bring it all together and make an instruction. So everything that is there is like, I use a competition, instead I use a training, you know. And if you guys are up to learn more, make sure you check it out. The link is on my bio, my Instagram. And stay tuned for Saturday. It will be a great show.
That's it. We'll definitely be watching that. Once again, thank you for being here. Thank you for your time, and we'll be watching you from the sidelines and enjoying the view. That's always
you're
one of the most entertaining competitors today in my mind. So it's always a pleasure talking to you, and good luck with all the success.
Thank you. That's one of my main missions. I think if you keep it into training, that's what's going to bring the jiu-jitsu to the next level when it comes to like mainstream, you know, and bring more people in. I feel like as more entertaining it is, more people that don't do jiu-jitsu will think that's cool and I want to do that. So that's one of my main missions now as an athlete. And yeah, thank you.
Good for you.
Beautiful. Thanks. That's awesome. I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
All right, let's wrap this up.
Thank you, guys.
Right, peace.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Raw Radio. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review and help us make the show even more amazing. For future episodes, check out our website and follow us on all major podcast platforms. Take care.